Today is Sunday, April 28th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 569 features NBC Sports Boston's Drew Carter.
And I'm Evan Valenti, and today's show is powered by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the official daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media. Download the app today. Use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back in a new edition of Celtics Beat to close out your weekend or maybe your Monday morning or whatever it is that you're listening to us in podcast form. Obviously, that's the beauty of these things, but hopefully you are sneaking it in at least ahead of game four between the Celtics and Heat coming up Monday night. All of this will be much more relevant and entertaining to you. Otherwise, you'll be living in some alternate universe where it's just boring and doesn't make sense. Adam Kaufman back with you after a week away. It's good to be back, rested, recharged. Evan Valenti had the show last week, did a great job previewing this series, this hated series that honestly always, whenever I hear Boston, Miami, I don't even care there's no Jimmy Butler. I just get PTSD. And Drew Carter, of course, is the, how do we classify him? Let's call him the road television voice of the Boston Celtics, soon to be full-time television voice of the Boston Celtics, but right now, just a fan like the rest of us because Mike Gorman's got the rest of the first round, as he should in his send-off, and then after that, you know, it's those national weirdos, which he's kind of one of as well because he works
hate those guys.
Drew, how are you, bud?
What's up, gentlemen? I'm great. Good to see you. AK, I cannot believe you took vacation right before the Miami series. I mean, this is what people are talking about. When Heat fans say the Celtics are afraid of the Heat, this is what they're talking about. They see your smiling face.
Yeah, it's me running away. I can't face it. I can't do it. I can't handle it. Yeah. So I'm excited to have you on. It's been a little while, obviously. In fact, has it been since your like introduction? I don't know if I've talked to you a number of times since, and I've had you on my radio show, but I don't know if we've had you on this show since then. So, I mean, that was going into the season. Now we're coming out of the season. So, or at least the regular season. So a lot to get to, but Ev, I got to tell you, I texted Drew earlier today and he humble bragged me because I said, could you come on the show? You know, we're going to do a podcast later year round, talk a little Celtics. And he said, totally love to do it. You know, could any chance we could do it on the earlier side? I've got to anchor SportsCenter in the morning. Like, I guess we could probably work around that a little bit. What's the schedule look like for you now that your Celtics obligations are done? Because even throughout the year, you're bouncing around. You're doing a zillion things for ESPN. You're popping up everywhere. You're even in cartoon form sometimes. What's going on in these coming months here?
My schedule is, number one, standing invitation for Celtics Beat. Like, basically, if there's anything else that comes up, I'll obviously clear that off my schedule so I can come on this wonderful show. I won't listen to that from you though, AK, because you know, you mentioned how we're not sure the last time we did this specific show because you do like 18 different programs. So how am I supposed to keep track of everything, you know, every platform where we've talked? But I am glad that Evan decided to show up to this edition of the Celtics Beat when I'm on. That's nice of you to do. It's good to see you.
Appreciate it. You know,
life's I know. Look, we're all busy here, especially at this time of year. So what the schedule looks like is like you mentioned, you know, it is kind of nice. I was telling you guys before we started, part of it is nice because I can just kind of sit back and watch the playoffs as a fan. I am done at this point. We're recording this between game three and game four. As most people know by now, I hope Mike is doing every game we have during the first round. And then after the first round, like you said, it goes all national. So Mike is traveling, you know, for the first time since the regular season opener in New York. And it's the first, I think it's the first team flight he's been on this season going to Miami. And of course, when we got the Miami matchup, I was like, you sure, Mike? You sure? You sure you don't want to just take the first round off? Because, you know, I'll take one for the team and go to Miami if you really want me to. It's kind of a bummer because we're going to play four times in Miami this season, maybe five. I expect it to only be four with the two regular season games and then two in the playoffs. And I think hopefully it'll be done in five, but we've gotten sniped out of every trip. And by we, I mean the NBC Sports Boston for the first two games in the regular season. And then myself these last two because Mike's doing them. So I'm 0-for-4 in calling road games against the Heat this year, which
you're young though. We got time. There's going to be plenty of trips to Miami, plenty of trips to LA. Yeah. Don't worry. It'll be fine. It'll be all right.
I know. I hope so. But in the summer, it'll be a lot of ESPN stuff. You mentioned SportsCenter, the studio. I live in Boston, so it's only like 2 hours to get to Bristol. I do have to be up wicked early in the morning to drive over. It'll be nice, no traffic at 1:30 local, roughly, when I'm driving over there. Doing some lacrosse for ESPN, some United Football League, which for those who don't know is like the new XFL mixed with the USFL. So we'll stay busy, but also take it easy a little bit because I'm not like Brian Scalabrine, man. I don't go to Mexico during the All-Star break. I'm still doing stuff, doing ESPN stuff. So I gotta unplug a little bit in the summer.
He's just waiting for his big three involvement anyway,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm messing around with that. To be fair, Scal, and he'll tell you this, Scal is pretty much the busiest person I've ever met in the summer because he's doing his AAU stuff. He's doing his big three. He's all over the place. If you talk to Scal for 5 minutes, he'll tell you he's busy in the summer.
He'll let you know what's going on.
Yeah.
Radio show, or at least he used to. I don't know if he's still doing
it. He does.
It.
I listen to it every day. The starting lineup on SiriusXM. Tune in.
There you go. So Ev, last time we did a show a couple weeks back, I'm a dick. I feel like I need to apologize to the main C's, the main Celtics. And
oh yeah, we definitely.
So because we had Brendan Glasheen on,
you're the bad luck guys on that one. That's for sure.
And you know, Maine was of course in the G League Finals, coming off of a 1-0 trouncing of the Oklahoma City Blue. And it was going back to OKC or to OKC for game two, but it's a best of three. And it was like, yeah, this is over. The series is over. Like, get fitted for your ring, buddy. Have yourself a good time parading through Portland. And even if they lose there, you get to bring it back to the expo and close the thing out. And you can be on the call at home and the fans can rush the court. It'll be a nice college environment. Nope. Celtics ended up dropping the next two games, lost the pursuit of Banner One in the G League. Maybe they died, their sins for the big club to get Banner 18. I don't know if any of that is connected, but I say all of that to say this. There is no way Boston loses to Miami. There's nothing about game two. No, there's barring a significant injury, there is no way Boston loses to Miami because
I don't like where we're headed here, just based off our past.
Game two was, look, you should feel good about what you saw in game three. Game three is a lot, you know, very similar to game one, game two. And I felt it at the time. I tweeted about it at the time. I aggravated the people on X or Twitter or whatever we want to call the thing because it was an aberration. Miami was, look, it was good. Boston was bad that night. I am not defending that. But there's just no way, absent Jimmy Butler and the ghost of Max Strus or anything like that, that this contingent of guys, as much as I like, you know, the baby Jokic and Hawkes and obviously Hero and all of that.
Baby Jokic is still in college.
These guys are not going to shoot at an historic pace for an entire series like they did last year. That's not to be replicated. It's not going to happen again. So Boston's going to win this series. Probably in five, maybe in six. Doesn't mean they're going to cruise to the finals and win a championship automatically or anything like that. But look, three fans who happen to cover the season one capacity or another sitting here, Drew, I'm sorry, the Heat don't scare me. They didn't scare me coming in absent Butler, and they don't scare me now despite that game two win going into game four.
Well, there's a stat here that I'd like to make you aware of. I don't know, because you've been on vacation, maybe you didn't see this. And this is just this is just to back up again the culture of Miami. We like to poke fun at it sometimes. It does get significant results. Miami has four playoff games in the past two seasons with shooting 50% from three just against the Celtics. No other team in the NBA has more than one against anybody. So point being, yes, it does feel like a steep uphill climb for Miami for sure. But past tells us that, this has happened quite often with these two teams in the playoffs. So as much as confident as I want to be, and I am extremely confident about this, we do have to just give a little hat tip to Miami because they've just been a pain in the ass for a while here. I will say, Joe Sway and I last week in your absence talked about what would have to happen for Miami to steal this thing. And I said, it's going to be a math problem. And I think Spo understands that in order for Miami to really compete in this thing, they're going to have to shoot an abnormal amount of threes and hit a lot of them, which they did in game two. They would also have to probably win the rebounding battle. Notice how in game three, Boston made a big, big priority crashing both the offensive glass and the defensive glass. But Spo understands what he has to do to make this work for Miami. He is facing a significant talent difference. And I'm not saying Miami's bad. These are all professional basketball players. Point being, Boston is just one of the most historically good teams of all time and is a championship away from being an all-time great one-season team. And Miami is just a bunch of guys that have great chemistry with a great head coach, and they're trying to, you know, punch up to a different weight class. And I'll give Miami a lot of credit. But, yeah, I mean, if this next game, as I was saying last night on the Garden Report, I'll plug another show of ours, I will say this game four Monday night, tomorrow night, whenever you're listening to this thing, is a critical game for Boston to win. I think if they really want to put Miami away, game four is how you do it. You bring it back home, you win in front of your home crowd, and this is done. But Drew, I don't know about you. Again, now that you're a fan, not sitting in the chair, trying to be, you know, as Switzerland as humanly possible, trying to see everything through the trees. It does feel like to me, that game four tomorrow night or tonight, whenever you listen to this, is the linchpin of this whole thing.
Well, for the record, Evan, I'm not trying to be Switzerland. I'm as annoyed or more annoyed by the Miami fans than anybody.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, it's good to be here. And look, I have a lot of respect for that.
I think it's funny too that you think he's trying to be Switzerland when he's on the call of a home broadcast.
Yeah.
That's
Switzerland here.
All right. Fine. I just, you know, you try to be impartial. You know,
maybe when he's anchoring Celtics highlights on SportsCenter,
yeah,
in Switzerland, but not the rest of the time.
And certainly not on the Celtics Beat podcast. Here's the thing. You know, I love what you said, Evan, about how Eric Spoelstra knows what they need to do. And that's make it a math problem, because when Spo has his team chuck 45 threes, he's a genius and he's one of the best coaches of all time. When Joe Mazzulla starts to do some math, he's an idiot and has to be fired, and he's going to tank the talented team. So isn't it interesting, that double standard? Now, I understand the difference there where, you know, Miami's shorthanded and it seems like they're fighting an uphill battle and the Celtics are super talented. I get it. But hey, a Jason Tatum three-pointer is worth just as much as a Nikola Jovic three-pointer. So the math still checks. And there's a reason why teams shoot a bunch of threes. And we've seen Miami do it. And of course, we've seen Boston do it the last 2 years, and the Heat did it in one game and proved that you can beat anybody. I just can't believe what I heard from Adam Kaufman. I know I've only been here for 1 year, but I thought that we were supposed to treat the Heat with reverence and deference because we're so terrified of what could happen with them.
Not now.
Not now. I mean, I guess, but like, look, I'm not going to, I agree with you. I think the Celtics will win the series in five. It's a complete mismatch, but I will never say, oh, you know, no, I'm not worried. I might have felt that way after game one. Then with what happened in game two, I'm like, oh my God, like this zombie Heat voodoo might actually be real. So I'm not going to say there's no way it happens.
Again, barring a major injury, like if heaven forbid Tatum or Brown go down or Porzingis goes down, who is in many ways, and we'll talk about this, sort of the key to everything, then sure. But if they are healthy, as they have been, I realize they were healthy when they lost game two, but if they are healthy for an entire series, Ev put it the right way. It's trying to punch up the weight class. If my five, almost 6 year old goes out and he's running around playing soccer with my 9 year old, he's probably going to luck into a goal or two, but I promise you he's not going to win. This is kind of what we're talking about right here. There's just no avenue for the Heat to go out and steal an entire best of seven series with their grouping of players versus the Celtics grouping of players as it currently exists. Now, is there a universe where Jimmy Butler, if this series gets stretched to seven, returns? I don't know. I don't think so, but he has not been officially ruled out for the entire series. He is considered doubtful to play in the series, and I think it's very unlikely. But if you want to, you know, leave some sort of cosmic hope, if you're a Heat fan out there, to that possibility, then sure, that would scare the ever-loving crap out of me. But I just don't think this is going to be, I think if I were to look at it, this is where I go like uber Celtics fan. I would look at game two as, you know, I would try and mentally turn it into a wake up call, and it's a good thing. And they realize they can't play with their food in the playoffs like they've done so many times in the past. The problem is, every time in the past, the last couple of years, recent playoff runs, when they've done that, and we, you know, they respond the following game, say, all right, good. That's not going to happen again. It happens again. So this is just who they are. This is going to, you know, I don't think there's going to be a dud again against Miami, but whoever they play in the next round, there will be maybe a couple of them, because it's just in their DNA, unfortunately. But I do want to go back to the Spo versus Missoula thing that you brought up. Now, Spo is arguably the best coach, current coach in the NBA, and I don't think Joe Mazzulla would be at all offended by me saying that. Spo is incredible. If there's an advantage on the Miami side at all, it is on the coaching side. But what does piss me off, and has for a while, this is not unique to the playoffs, I'm sure you guys all see it in your mentions, is anytime anything goes wrong, as you alluded to before, Drew, Joe sucks, has to be fired, he's costing them the run to Banner 18, and I'm just at a point where, like, let's just do it on the show rather than like Twitter mentions and responding to every tweet. Let's just do it on the show. Most of those people probably listen. I want you to remove any sort of relationship you have with Mazzulla. Maybe you have a friendship. I have no idea, but you certainly have a relationship. You talk to him often enough. Remove all of that. If I say to you, what makes Joe Mazzulla a good head coach? Doesn't even have to be great. Doesn't even have to be like light years above average. But a good, solid NBA head coach versus a bad one that needs to get whacked. What do you say?
Well, first of all, I do consider Joe Mazzulla a friend, and that's why I wear these blue light glasses, which he's a big proponent of, as we discussed before the show. He and his wife, Kameh, both wear those red lenses because those are the most intense version of the blue light glasses. And as you pointed out, Joe Mazzulla is intense. Everything he does is to the maximum degree. And I kind of think that's the answer, is his intensity and what he demands of himself, which then I think naturally translates to what he demands from the players. You know, I did not play sports at a high level, but I remember in like seventh grade travel basketball, if you see your coach doing what he's asking you to do, you have no excuse, right? I mean, Joe Mazzulla, I think there's a chance Joe Mazzulla is in as good or better shape than pretty much everyone on the team. I mean, we know about his jujitsu routine. The guy's a maniac, you know? And I say that in the most endearing way. So I think that's part of it, is I feel like that helps with the motivational side, is the fact that he's in the mix with those guys. And he's pretty close to a lot of them in age. In fact, he's younger than Al Horford. And then the other thing I respect about him is, despite that intensity and the insane competitiveness, he does not waver from the core tenets of the team. And I think that might frustrate fans. Like the best example is what we talked about with game two. When the Heat catch fire from three, it's like, stop defending them like they're shooting 30%. They're not. Caleb Martin has turned into Ray Allen mixed with Steph Curry. Like, let's get up on these guys. But if you watch, I don't know if you guys saw this, but in our pregame show on NBC Sports Boston, heading into game three, they had a Wired for Sound segment with Mazzulla in every single huddle talking about closeouts. Hey guys, we got to have high hands on closeouts. We cannot let them keep making threes. And I was complaining as much as anybody after the game, like, hey, we have to adjust when Miami has proven that they're going to be shooting at a high level on a given night. And I think he tried to, but the team just didn't do it. I mean, the defining image for me from game two is Drew Holiday, an elite defender who's going to be an Olympian this summer, keeping his hands by his sides while he closed out. And I don't know what that was. I don't know if that was in the game plan beforehand and there wasn't an adjustment or what happened. But look, Caleb Martin doesn't shoot a pretty ball, but on that night it was going in. So Joe Mazzulla, I think, was trying to adjust in game by imploring his guys to close out, and then maybe something else changed in game three, but they played with more force and they played with more effort. I think that's a credit to the head coach. But what I mean by not wavering from the plan is, like, look, what you said, Adam, you don't expect lightning to strike twice, right? So we're not going to treat the Miami Heat like they are the Golden State Warriors because of one game. And again, I think that's going to frustrate fans. But if you look at what happened last year, it was an anomaly. And I don't think that that necessarily means you have to throw everything out the window, especially when this year's team is better than last year's team was, and the Heat are more shorthanded.
I think just real quick, it's interesting you brought this up because I had a little bit of a piggyback on top of that because it's something that we don't think about when it comes to good coaching, right? And then, Drew, you kind of threw a little bit of a monkey wrench in my point. And so I'd love to hear you sort of give me a little more ammunition for this. What makes a good coach sometimes, folks, and strategy is a whole big part of this, and I think a lot of people focus on the strategy portion of the Joe Mazzulla experience. I think what people miss is how effective and how good of a communicator Joe Mazzulla is with his teammates. Granted, this little wired for sound thing where he was telling guys to put their hands up and close out, and they didn't do it the entire game, that's frustrating. I would say other than that, and I'm sure there are other times throughout the season where guys haven't listened, it feels like the message that Joe Mazzulla is delivering has really fallen upon each of the players. And even at this point, like, they're professionals. I get it. Look, Drew Holiday's been around a while. Al Horford's been around a while. These guys have been around a while. Like, it's not like the Oklahoma City Thunder where everybody's 22 and under here. These are, you know, I know, you know, Tatum and Brown are younger, but they've been through a lot together. They don't really need a ton of like motivation. They kind of understand. At the same time, that's almost harder to manage because there's expectations. There's been life experiences. Still, at the same time, Mazzulla can find ways to connect with his players, communicate with his players to do the same thing at the same time. And I think a lot of people don't look at that when they look at it, how good a head coach is.
There's a lot of empowerment with the players. Like, there was a story earlier this year where Drew Holiday essentially is the quarterback of the defense and can basically put on a press. He can call it himself. He can call an audible in the middle of the game. And I think that a lot of that comes from the trust Joe Mazzulla puts in his players. I really feel like Mazzulla's ego is smaller than pretty much any other NBA coach. I really believe that. And I think he has no illusions about, you know, where he came from growing up in Rhode Island and how he got the job. Like, I don't think he looks in the mirror and sees a guy who's won NBA championships as a coach. I think he really respects the position and respects the guys he's coaching. And a lot of the time, maybe people think that there's undercoaching because of how much Mazzulla does trust the team. But with how good they are, I think they've earned that.
You don't think as we all are witness to some of those media interactions, obviously people want to point at Gary Washburn and the back and forth those guys will have usually about the, you know, volume of three pointers or whatever it may be. And by the way, I assume they have a perfectly fine, good relationship. And I think a lot of it is in jest and some stuff is, you know, played or taken out of context, depending on which show you listen to or how a clip is played back, all of that. But you don't think he comes off as someone that there is about, you know, a bit of an ego there? And when I ask that, I don't even say that in a critical way. Like, who doesn't have an ego when you get to that level? But you don't think that some of that projects a little bit?
I don't think so. I think it's not condescending. I think Joe actually just loves arguing with people. It's not like, how dare you challenge my authority? It's more like, let's go. Let's get in a spat here. I mean, the guy looks at everything as a challenge. He said that he like doesn't go through a revolving door because he thinks there's an outcome where the thing gets stuck and he's trapped in there. Like, he's always thinking about things in a way that, you know, normal people like us really aren't. And everything's combative. I remember there was a press conference earlier this year, and it was after a practice, and I think it was John Corrales was asking him about trying to deal with rim protectors on the other team. And he had a couple examples of like when the Celtics had struggled against a really good shot blocker. And Joe was like, well, what about against this guy? And what about against this guy and this guy? And now it's 3-2. And I have more examples than you do. And JK's like, damn, you're really keeping score. And Joe's like, I always keep score. And like, that's just how it is with him. I really understand what you're saying, AK. And there are times like, dude, trust me, there are times where I've kind of been frustrated. I do those one-on-ones with him before the road games. And there are times where it's like, really, man, like, you can't give me something here. You can't play ball. But he's just not wired that way. And I don't think it comes from a place of, you know, I'm better than you. I think it just comes from a place of everything is a fight. And like, he's not just going to sit there and accept a criticism if he feels like it's unwarranted.
Quick break from today's show to tell you today's show is powered by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. Want to play alongside some of Prize Picks' favorite players, like Meek Mill and Sugar Sean O'Malley? Well, now you can find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community every single week, and get on all the playoff action for basketball and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a whole new level during the postseason. You can now bet up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, with hockey, baseball, on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. And Prize Picks is now the official daily fantasy sponsor of CLNS. And thanks for a new partnership. Our listeners get a pretty sweet new deal to sign up with Prize Picks. Just download the app. Use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100 after you download the app. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Yeah. So what about this series? You know, obviously I've made my opinion known to those watching, listening, but I can also hear or feel the people in the comments section on the CLNS Media YouTube page saying, way to jinx it, Koff. It's my Heat in 5 or Heat in 6. Like, this is, it's all going to hell. What makes this, if anything, I don't even want to say go sideways, because I just don't see that outcome being a reality, but what makes this a series versus the Celtics coming away with a gentleman's sweep?
It would have to be a code red, baby. A code red where someone takes out one of the Celtics' best players and there's an injury. I don't know. I mean, I think, again, I'm not going to say what you said and say there's no way the Heat win the series, because I just feel like there's too much history there. But I agree that the Celtics have way more talent than Miami. And I tend to believe that who you are in the regular season is who you are in the playoffs. And I think if anyone would disagree with that, if anyone would disagree with that, it's Jimmy Butler. But if you look at their run last year, Jimmy Butler turns into a superhero against Milwaukee and Giannis wasn't fully healthy. And then the whole team catches fire against Boston. And that's how you end up with an 8 seed going to the finals. I don't necessarily think it's like Jimmy Butler is not an all-star in the regular season and then is consistently Michael Jordan in the playoffs. I don't think so. But that being said, without him, like, they just don't have enough juice. So unless they do what they did in game 2 and shoot like 50%+ from 3, I do not see them challenging the Celtics in this series.
Can I be honest with the both of you? I feel slightly better that this game is in Miami versus in Boston. Boston and Miami throughout the past couple of years have just traded blows on each other. Like, the opposite, the away team seems to play with more intensity and swagger than they do at home. Like, Miami, I feel like, goes into Boston and feels like, oh yeah, they get like more juiced up playing in Boston than they do on their home.
The Florida Panthers feel that way about TD Garden. All the South Florida team.
It's gotta be a Florida thing, but it's to me, like, if game 4 were in Boston, I'd feel a little different about it. But because game 4 is in Miami, I just feel like this unusual, weird confidence of, yeah, they're going to handle their business. If you listen to all the quotes after game 3, and, you know, look, I don't know. I wasn't there. But obviously the temptation of going out in Miami and having a good time with a day in between. Totally understand it. I don't know if I'd be able to resist if I was making the money these guys do and I had the fame, notoriety these guys do. I don't know if I'd be able to resist going out and having a good time. At the same time, if you listen to the guys after the game, they're like, nope, this is a business trip. We are here for one thing only. It's getting W's. We're eating W's just like Jameis Winston. And then we're getting out of here. We're going back home. Like, that's the vibe I got. It felt like, I don't know if you guys felt the same way. It just felt a little more serious. It felt like these guys were like, no, we're focused. This thing is, we can't let our foot off the gas here. We can't let Miami breathe. We need to come back. We got to come back in game 4 and make sure we're focused right from the opening jump, because if we're not, Miami's going to win this thing.
It's amazing that the Heat might be the team partying more on the road than the Celtics in this series, because some of their players were spotted at Encore after game one. And I don't know, I think you're probably right, Evan. Like, guys will obviously never tell a reporter, like, yeah, I'm going out to South Beach. I'm getting turned up tonight. They would never say that. So maybe they are and they lied. But I do think just being around the team all year, it feels like there's a very specific focus. And it's hard for me to say if that's unique, because this is, you know, the first time I've traveled with an NBA team. But I do get the sense that they know how close they've been, obviously, and they know how good of a chance this is for them to finally achieve their ultimate goal. So I would not be surprised if they're staying in at the hotel in Miami, even though it would be tempting to go out. Maybe that's why they sent Gorman to South Beach. That's a secondary reason. It's like, obviously, last playoff series, we want Mike to call the games, but also, like, we don't really trust Drew to be in Miami.
Who knows what this guy's going to get into?
Or you let Mike just, you know, Miami Mike Gorman for a couple of days and let him, you know, go to the blazer and like an open collar polo shirt,
yep,
with your aviators on and just have a blast, you know?
That'd be dangerous.
Game four in a white suit.
Yeah. I would love it. I hope he did it. I hope somebody brought a camera too, because that'd be just I would watch the about 10 minutes of that, just the highlights of Mike Gorman's night.
Miami Vice Gorman.
That's it.
Going up. Yeah. So, look, this is going to drive our listeners crazy, but I'm just going to do it because it's how I feel about this series. When you're looking ahead,
You're
looking ahead at what else is happening in the Eastern Conference right now. Okay. Cavaliers and Magic, that's a series. It's a best of three at this point. Pacers are up 2-1 on the Bucks as we sit here. There's going to be game four tonight. Matter of fact, I think it's starting just about right now. This series is over. Indiana is going to win that series. Sorry, Milwaukee. This, by the way, Ev, I would love to spend more time on this. It may be like in the future, but no Giannis. Dame is out for this one. This is like Doc Rivers' wet dream.
Dude, he's going to win that. You think that Indiana's going to win this game or win this series? Oh, I bet you. Absolutely. I'll make you a side bet off air that the Bucks win tonight. It's going to be a massive.
They win tonight because Bobby Portis goes nuclear and Chris Middleton drops another 40 piece.
All of it.
Like, Indiana's still winning this series. And this is Doc sitting here blame free.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. Like, this man dodges strays like nothing I have ever seen.
Doc is putting the blame pie in the oven right now, and it's going to come out nice and warm, and he'll be doling out the slices to everybody. The only thing that could make it better is if their plane, like, breaks down and they have to sit on the tarmac for 4 hours.
You blame the pilot then. Yeah, the equipment manager, the pilots of the plane, you know, the mechanics.
When Doc even threw the bus driver under the bus, that was next level, man. But the Knicks, I mean, this is fun. Knicks are up 3-1 on the Sixers with their win earlier today. Jalen Brunson is playoff Jimmy Butler all of a sudden. And, you know, obviously he's had an incredible year. It's not just the playoffs, but Joel Embiid continues to be a playoff choker. He had what was it, 1 point in the fourth quarter, played all 12 minutes earlier today. I think he was 0-for-5 from the field. This team implodes. He is at the center of it. He is all of a sudden dirtier than Draymond Green, and yet, you know, people are just coming to terms with it. So they're going to go down. Knicks are going to win this. Hopefully they close it out at home. It would be great, genuinely be great for you Knicks fans, if any of you are out there listening. I know you bing-bonged us in the past. I like you. I like you people. I hope the Knicks get it done. Is the Knicks the answer to this question? If the Celtics do advance and go on a nice little run here, forget the Nuggets and NBA Finals and any of that stuff. Just talking Eastern Conference. Who does provide the biggest threat?
I do think it is the Knicks, but can I just say something about the Philly-New York series real quick?
Please.
I don't mean to sound like old guy complaining right now, but there are a bunch of times where the discourse around that series is, man, what a great old school rivalry throwback series. It's physical. Feels like the 70s and 80s out here. And I'm sitting there watching that, like, everybody is flailing. Everybody is bitching. It's amazing. I understand that Jalen Brunson,
Kyle Lowry, and Embiid are on the same team.
And you know, like, Jalen Brunson, I understand he's a little undersized and the guy's he's a bulldog, right? I think he's mostly fun to watch. But every single play, dude, he's got a lot of Luka in him every single time. And then Tibbs, who I have a ton of respect for, but half the press conferences, Tibbs is saying that you know, Jalen Brunson's getting fouled. So, look, it's really fun basketball to watch for the most part. But between Embiid and Brunson, there is a lot of foul baiting in that series. And I think the Knicks are super fun to watch. But, man, that watching that game today, I was like, damn, this is out of control. Like this, you just wouldn't see that in the 80s. As physical as it is, it's just a lot different. With that being said, I do think the Knicks are the biggest threat to the Celtics in the East. And even then, like, if the Knicks and Celtics match up, I think the series would be 5 or 6. I know the Knicks beat the Celtics pretty handily toward the end of the regular season. That was a weird one in that stretch where it didn't seem like the Celtics were totally engaged. It was after they had already clinched the top overall seed. I just feel like without Julius Randle, the Knicks don't have enough punch. And Brunson being your main guy at 6 feet tall, I just think is going to be an issue against the best defensive backcourt in the NBA and a team with a ton of length and athleticism and great defenders on the wing and great rim protection. I don't think the Knicks would really give the Celtics that big of an issue, but they are the best team remaining outside Boston in the East. Do you guys feel the same way?
Yeah, only because of injuries. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I just think it's too early for Orlando. You know, the Cavs are a funky team. You know, Mitchell, we've seen Mitchell go God mode before.
It's wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, the bubble series with him and Murray. I mean, you just remember some really classic games. And so I mean, look, he can go off at any time. But I just don't see a complete like unit. And because, you know, Dame and Giannis are probably done, I'm just not really scared of, you know, whatever version of Chris Middleton the Celtics get. It's still not going to really matter. The Knicks, because they're physical, present an interesting challenge. And my only question is when they get there, what does that team look like with Tibbs playing everybody 45 minutes a game? Like it's classic Tibbs. It's what he does. I totally get why, but Brunson being, you know, under 6 feet playing 45, 46 tough minutes every game, getting his ass kicked. I gotta give him a ton of credit. I would fold like a cheap lawn chair out there. He's getting his ass kicked up and down. I don't know how many legs, he's just not going to have legs left. And that's what I love about the Celtics team is, you know, you're getting to bring it back to Celtics real quick. Like the Peyton Pritchard minutes are really solid right now. I mean, he's playing with a whole different confidence. This whole season, he's been great. And then another credit to Mazzulla schematically getting him really focused and really ramped up for the playoffs. Pritchard's been unbelievable. Hauser's been really good. You know, Al Horford's giving them solid. Like just Boston's going to be way more rested by the time they get there. So that'll be really interesting. But this is going to be, this is what you want if you're Boston. This is exactly, if you could talk to the basketball gods and say, hey, like, show me the easiest path. Like, this is it. This is it. That everything has broken right for them. As long as everybody stays healthy, they should have a relatively easy way to the finals. Now, last year, so the same thing similar to Denver. It's like Denver really didn't play anybody at all the title run. I mean, people were like, oh, the Lakers. I'm like, they swept the Lakers, okay? Like, it was a competitive sweep.
It was such a competitive sweep, though, Evan. Come on.
Very
competitive four-game series ever.
Yeah, I mean, very similar to the Celtics sweeping the Nets a couple of years ago, right? Yeah, same feeling, but still 4-0. And I can't imagine how Lakers fans feel now considering, I don't know if either of you saw the stat on the screen last night at the end of the game, how much LA has led in this series and how much the Nuggets have led in this series. That would be extremely frustrating.
From a gambling standpoint, and I know this didn't come to fruition in game 4, but games 1 through 3, the play has been, you know, the half full bet of Lakers Nuggets. Lakers have led at the half every game. The Nuggets come back to win and cover every game. Just again, didn't happen in game 4, but yeah, I mean, look, the Lakers, they've got their in-season tournament. I hope it was a very successful year for them. There's no, I don't see how anybody in the West, as much as I love, like I absolutely took the Timberwolves for granted. What they are doing to the Suns right now is incredible to me. And I didn't even think that highly of the Suns. It's just, I didn't think the Timberwolves were ready. I too much inexperience there. And granted, there are injury issues, but what the Thunder are doing to the Pelicans, my God. And congrats, you know, to Dagnall, Coach of the Year officially. That came out a little while ago. It's just I mean, the West is going to be fun. The West is a more compelling conference right now than the East. And I still just don't see how anybody gets in the Nuggets' way.
Yeah, I think so. Although, with that being said, AK, like, it's interesting to me how, and I felt this way too, but the public narrative was that the West, the first round, is so intriguing, right? And the East, you know, you're going to have some blowouts in the Eastern Conference first round. Cavs, Magic, who cares? Not that interesting. But the West, man, the wild, wild West. And all of a sudden, you got two teams who are up 3-0. And then actually three 3-0 leads. And then the Lakers finally got one. But just going back to the East, like, here's what I'll say about the Knicks. I feel like, I don't know if I should feel slimy about this as a Celtics fan, but I do really enjoy watching the Knicks. And I think what they've done this year is incredibly impressive. If those two teams match up in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Knicks will believe they're going to win. There's no doubt. That team is so connected. They play so hard. Josh Hart, dude, like, blocking guys at the rim, 15 rebounds, like, whatever it was, 5 or 6 offensive rebounds. Those guys are badasses. Mm-hmm. And they have sunned Joel Embiid in that series. Absolutely sunned him. Isaiah Hartenstein picks up 5 fouls in the third quarter, and Embiid still does nothing. Mitchell Robinson's not playing. Bogdanovich gets hurt like the second possession he plays. You're at home. How does Philly not win that game? The Sixers or the Knicks are just so tough, and they're an embodiment of their coach. So even though I don't think they'll have enough talent, and ultimately that deficit will be their undoing, that series is going to kick ass if we play them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I love it. I'm thrilled for Knicks fans people get mad when people say this, but like, certain sports are better when teams are better. Like, I'm thrilled for Bears fans. I think the NFL is going to be really fun because the Bears have the first time ever the Bears have a quarterback, right? That's a really passionate fan base. The NBA is better when the Knicks are good. Like, it's just a fact. It's just the juice from the crowd is undeniable. Their fans are very passionate, and this is a team that Knicks fans like. Like, this is it's not a flashy team. It's a lunch pail team that just shows up, kicks ass, and leaves usually with a win. So, I'm just impressed with the culture building that's happened there, because they've gotten it wrong so many times. So many times they've gotten it wrong. And now it feels like the right pieces are in place. Like, Thibodeau has really instilled a tough culture there, and it's been a nice turnaround for them. But again, at the same time, it's like Boston's just, it's going
to
be really tough.
Well, going back to what you said about the path before and the Nuggets last year, like, I realized people at the time, it was just, oh my God, what an easy path. And there's still a little bit of that because it's fresh. I promise you, in 10, 15, 20 years, nobody is going to remember the Nuggets path. People are only going to remember that Jokic won a title, probably the first of multiple. Much like, you know, like our buddy Seth Landman, who's on the show every once in a while. We've got our group text thread, and I don't remember if this was just me and him or was on the group thread, but we were talking about the, you know, Dame not playing in this game for the Bucks, and he was saying, you know, man, it actually kind of bums me out, because I really like the best four players, that top four on the Bucks. It's they're a fun team to watch play. And I said, yeah, no, I like those guys too. I also hope they go down in flames, because there's no part of me that wants the Celtics to have a challenging run through the East. Yeah. I mean, you want to be as prepared as possible to match up inevitably with the Nuggets if you get there. That's all well and good. But no, I mean, get rid of any speed bumps that you can. I'm not too proud. I don't need to, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. Screw that. Win a title. Win Banner 18. I don't care what it looks like on the way. Just get there.
I'd rather prepare for the finals by making sure our best players are healthy than by being tested down the stretch of these games or in a 7-game series, whatever that even means. At a certain point, you are who you are. I mean, the Celtics have already established their DNA. I don't think anything's really going to change if we, you know, play 6 crunch time games and go to 2 game 7s on the way to the finals. I'd rather not do that, to be completely honest. And you're right. In 10 years, all we're going to remember is the parade. It doesn't matter who the Celtics beat on the way there. I don't care if Kendrick Perkins is going to be criticizing the path to get there on First Take. He can say whatever he wants to say. He's already invalidated all of his opinions as far as I'm concerned. So I don't care what everybody says on the debate shows. Just win a championship.
And besides, I mean, your broadcast partner, Brian Scalabrine, everybody remembers that he was MVP of the NBA Finals back in
2000. Right. I think we've reached that point. I think it's been almost 20 years now. So he is the MVP of the Finals. Yeah.
Oh, man. It's fun. Look, I realize some people out there, again, listening, watching, probably thinking like, man, it's, you know, couldn't you guys dissect these games a little bit more? But this is, as it's always been, it's a, you know, we do once a week. It's a big picture show. We're not coming at you like the Garden Report post game after every game. Ev, by the way, nice job, pinch hitting on that show after game three. That's not what, you know, we do. What we do here is, you know, take a, as the cliche goes, a 10,000 foot view at what is happening with this team. And what is happening with this team right now should be a relatively easy series win. And so that's, you know, what we're, if there's a speed bump, or a crater in the road that knocks things off before we do our next show, then we'll respond accordingly. But right now, coming out of game three and expectations for Monday's game four, you should feel awfully damn good about where things are at, not only for your Boston Celtics, but in the Eastern Conference and the way this thing is shaping up right now. Because this is, I know some people have said it along the way, like during the regular season, like if not now, when? Because you have all these teams that are young and getting better, like watch out for the Thunder in the years to come. Nuggets aren't going away. I realize the Celtics have all their important players locked up for their foreseeable future. And Derek White, I do think, is going to get a contract, you know, God willing he does, and all of that stuff. But it's not easy. It's never easy. And for people, well, you were in the finals a couple of years ago and you lost and you fell short last year. Well, yeah, because it's hard. It's freaking hard to win a championship. None of us, you know, the three of us, we can't personally speak to that. But as observers, we can certainly see this is not an easy thing. It's why only one team obviously can do it. And so, you know, hopefully this is Boston's year, as we have been saying for years and years and years. And they've got the makeup. They've got the talent. You just got to stay healthy on the way to give yourself a chance. Even if you believe, and I am in this camp, that who's going to stop the Nuggets? Either conference, who is going to stop the Nuggets? To have a chance, you got to at least get there. And then Who the hell knows what happens at that point in time. And so that's my focus with the Celtics right now, Drew.
Well, all I can say about that, and this is the last thing I'll say before I go, because I do got to go to bed before morning Sports Center tomorrow. Make sure you tune in, everybody.
Please.
All you can ask for is a chance. And the Celtics have consistently in the past few years put themselves in position to have a chance to win it all. And that's a really good spot to be. I mean, you talk about sliding doors moments in the NBA. One inch can change everybody's entire concept of what a player or team is, right? Like think about KD's foot against Milwaukee. If he has a smaller shoe, they might win that series and they might win the championship. And then we look at a bunch of guys differently and maybe Giannis isn't in Milwaukee anymore. Like one tiny thing can change so much. And so all you can ask for is to be in a position to compete every year. And that's what the Celtics have done. So credit the front office, credit the players, credit the coaches. This is their best opportunity. And like you said, with the core, they should be around for at least the next few years with more chances to win. But let's just do it this year. Let's get it done. Let's take that easy path. Let's coast the finals. Let's knock off Denver. Let's do it. Let's have a parade. Yeah.
Drew Carter, he does a great job, obviously, when in season. Next time we have you on, which, you know, like you said, you're readily available throughout this playoff run, so we will have you on again. I do want to, we didn't have any time to explore just what year one, you know, was like for you, obviously.
Nobody cares about that, AK. They want to talk about the team, not the announcers.
I care. I want to.
Off-season show, Kaufman.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We'll do it in July. But right, while we're reviewing Summer League, we will talk about Drew's year one and look ahead to year two. But hopefully a months-long playoff run ahead of us here as we are on the cusp of May, and it's going to be fun. Drew Carter, NBC Sports Boston, make sure you do check him out there. I'm sure you'll be popping up on some studio shows, breaking it down what is going on. Evan Valenti, of course, always a fine job here. And I am Adam Kaufman. Rate, review, subscribe to the Celtics Beat Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Game 4, Monday night. Take it, C's. Don't make me look like a fool.